Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I am your host, and I am once again honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. The Business Creators Radio Show takes you to those places where you have those mastermind moments, those aha inspirations that can change your trajectory or at least bring you a little bit closer to serving from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. It's starting to warm up here in Las Vegas. Finally, we're beginning to see the end of the worst of our desert winter. So I'm finally in a position where during the day I can sit out on my balcony here in my sumptuous apartment overlooking the very corner of the strip, which is about 15 blocks away from me. At any rate, we are going to be having a conversation. It's going to be one of those tragedy to triumph sort things combined with some practical guidance and advice that can help you if you find yourself in a situation. What attracted me to today's guest is that I know there are a lot of folks out there, especially today, we're still in a very interesting economic time. And by interesting, I mean not necessarily good, particularly when you go buy gas or hit the grocery store. And I know that a lot of us, including me actually, need a little boost every once in a while to know that we're not alone, that some of the challenges we're facing today can be overcome. And candidly, a lot of people have had it a lot worse than us and have come back thriving. And Joseph Lombardi, who's today's guest, is an example of this. So Joe is an acclaimed financial expert, managing partner at Iron Hawk Financial, which is renowned for his profound dedication to financial resilience and education. He has a great story, which I'm going to have him tell you about, but let me just give you a few highlights and a few teasers. He's the author of significant works like There's a Better Way Than the 401k and Being Your Own Bank, and he's been featured in publications like the International Business Times, the Blue Book Network Who's Who. His expertise has been widely recognized, including an impressive array of accolades, including repeated honors at the Leaders Conference and the prestigious Royal Blue Conference, where he speaks to his unwavering commitment to protecting and empowering clients against unforeseen financial crises. And having gone through an unforeseen financial crisis last year, I can tell you, I wish I'd met him a year ago. At any rate, he is known for embodying his mission to safeguard and educate, ensuring his clients' financial security and long-term prosperity. Joseph Lombardi, come on in, the weather's fine.
So happy to be here, Adam. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So what we like to do here, and this actually might be the first part of our interview, just the way that we're flowing here, is we like to have me read off the official bio. Now, I read off part of it, and it's so profound and so impressive. I'm not sure I'm worthy to be here, and this is my show and my episode. So what I want to do is I want to turn this over to you before we dive in and have you tell us a bit about your journey in your own words and what's brought you to where you are today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. And before you dive in, I just want to preface for our listeners so you can really lean into this, that his family had a $15 million business that they lost. So take it from there, Joe.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on the show. I was blessed enough to live on both sides of the financial, life, so to say. I was very, very poor after my parents got divorced, lived in a place that had no running water. Then my grandmother gave my dad a loan to really jumpstart JB Lombardi Builders. And then we became multimillionaires. And I was getting, new Jordans when they came out. I was going to card stores, buying at Knights of Columbus, buying any basketball and football cards I could dream of or wanted. And And then shortly after that, my dad falls three stories off a ladder, a bone in his foot disintegrates in the hospital for 2 years. I have a sister that's born 2 pounds, 7 ounces, fetal alcohol syndrome, where my ex-stepmom drank vanilla extract and Listerine during pregnancy. I'm 15 years old. I'm lettered at football, track, and basketball at Fairfield Ward. And all of a sudden, I got to drop out of sports, go work at a daycare, because neither me or my daughter at the time, or sister, acted like my daughter, were over 18. So both of us sort of went to DCF. So it really intentionally forced me to grow up quickly, raising a young child in high school, and not really having much support with that. And then shortly after that, my mother passes away from cirrhosis liver from alcoholism. She had no life insurance. And a couple of years later, my grandmother has a stroke, led to dementia. She lost my grandfather's estate, Lombardi Masonry, to Ludlow Nursing Home in Fairfield, Connecticut, across from Sacred Heart. So God has shown me a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. And I had a choice. I could take that and I could play the victim and boo-hoo, my life's so bad, or I could do something about it and try and help other people from not experiencing those devastational emotional consequences that we're all going to most likely live through. But on top of it, to live financially where you can't even buy food and you lost your spouse or your kid or your parent. So it's so important for people to build financial foundations, because if you don't, everything that you're building, all your goals, all your energy, everything that you wake up for, die for, cry for, sweat for, can all be taken away from you. And it may not even be your fault, an accident, a diagnosis. So it's very important to build that financial foundation, which is what for the last 21 years I've been basically doing 24/7 in all 50 states in the country, trying to protect families, protect businesses, and just protect people.
Right, right. And, you know, that I've heard so many stories of people who lost it all. And I know a lot of people that right now are in a situation where they're somewhat precarious. They're not even insulated against being able to pay the premium on their health insurance if, say, they get cancer. Like you know, if I got cancer, for example, I have the money to cover the premium or the maximum deductible for the year. So at least for that year, I'm good to go as far as getting my treatment is what's going to be covered under the insurance. That's fine. But that would pretty much drain me. So I would be eating a lot of soup and while I would still be able to pay my rent and everything else, knowing that my income would probably diminish because I would have less physical ability to earn any, I would still live likely for at least a year with the treatments. But unfortunately, there are a lot of folks, particularly in the entrepreneurial space, those who go all in to get their venture going and the returns don't come fast enough, or things were going well and they didn't see the pivot until it whacked them upside the head. That's a lot of people these days, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, me doing this for over 2 decades, having 1,600 clients, over $1 billion of protection and rollovers, I've seen a lot of different things. I've had over 50 people out on disability, death, long-term care needs. And I know that, you know, I'm making a difference. But I mean, if you're lucky enough to get old, you're not going to be able to take care of yourself at some point. So right. If you win the game of life, that means you're going to need somebody to help take care of you when you're older. And what people don't understand is there's this thing called taxes, and there's this thing called inflation. Mm-hmm. And people aren't planning at all to protect our future self. You have your present self, your past self, and your future self. And if you're not going to take care of your future self, nobody else will. I mean, the government will take care of you. They'll throw you in jail, also known as a nursing home, where you'll be with a stranger next to you with a TV blaring 24 uh-huh. hours a day with people that don't want to be there making 15, 20 bucks an hour, that maybe they just broke up with their boyfriend or girlfriend, and now you have to deal with somebody who's mad taking care of you or bringing you to the bathroom or changing you or giving you a shower. And it's what I found is that if you give people the option to either do that or have enough funds to stay home and celebrate Christmas, Thanksgivings, birthdays with their family, or get thrown into a home where really nobody wants to visit you because it is a very airy place to be there. My dad has Parkinson's now, and he's been in there for, 7 years now, and I'm his power of attorney. So it's It's one of those things where if you fail to plan, your plan's to fail. And I'm trying to bring awareness to it. And if at the same time I can help save you $1 million in taxes, build you a tax-free pension, get you double-digit returns on that money, turn a liability into an asset, leverage it, have it sue-proof, divorce-proof in some states. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are turning into this strategy as a financial foundation, but also as a way for them to be their own bank. And it's yeah. very important knowing that the banking system isn't in the greatest of health at the moment.
Oh, really? There's a shock.
Well, you know, some people are looking to put money in gold and silver. Not a good idea. They keep their money in the bank. Not a really good idea. The safest place to put your money historically, believe it or not, has been insurance companies. Companies I represent survived Civil War, World War I, World War II, and the Great Depression. They've never lost a dollar for any of their clients. They actually made money during the Depression when the market was down over 90%. So there's definitely creative ways to do it. Some people call it the Rockefeller strategy.
Okay.
It's basically what the ultra wealthy people do. And if you are doing what everybody else is doing, like 401ks and IRAs, you're going to be in a world of hurt when taxes go up, which they are, the market goes down, which it is, inflation and interest rates go up, which they are. More of that money is not going to belong to you, knowing we owe $300 trillion in U.S. unfunded liabilities, Medicare, Social Security, international debt, knowing that taxes here in the United States, highest marginal, were 70% in the 1980s, and they were 91% in the 1960s. So what people don't understand, we didn't have wars in Ukraine or wars in Israel. We didn't have BRICS trying to take over our petrodollar. We didn't almost have a civil war going on between a lot of politics mixed in with that. We have a lot of variables that none of them are really good right now. So there's not a lot of positive attributes to where our financial or let alone future is going to be in 10 to 20 or 30 years right now. So people are very uncertain and they're looking for alternative ways to build wealth, have it liquid, not pay taxes, have high returns. And this strategy does all of those.
Right, right. So, you know, I've been thinking, you know, I've had to dip into my savings account a bit to get by a couple rough patches here recently. And, you know, I've noticed it's actually gone down considerably, not just for my withdrawals, but just because of the market. And I've been thinking about, is there something else I could do? Because people tell me about 401ks and IRAs and Roth IRAs and things like that. And I got to tell you, candidly, that stuff excites me about as much as the idea of lobotomizing myself with a butter knife.
No, I totally understand that. You know, this strategy actually is called the rich person's Roth.
Yeah.
It's what the ultra wealthy people do. And the coolest feature about this whole thing, I can get into 100 reasons why it's amazing. I own it. My kids own it. 1,600 of my clients own it. But the biggest reason I love it is because when you take money out, you still earn interest on the money that's not there. So let's say you have $10,000 in there. You pull out $8,000 to put down on the car. Your $10,000 original deposit is still in the market earning interest. And then you take a loan through a general account called a non-direct recognized loan. And you're still basically you can earn two streams of revenue on $1. That's what a lot of my clients do. They dump it in. They buy real estate. They earn rental income on the real estate dollars. And they still earn a profit on the money that's inside the strategy.
Huh, that's interesting. So so here's something that comes to mind here. You know, you mentioned protecting assets and things like that. Now, I myself am not currently married. I've actually dodged the M bullet twice. The second time that I almost went down the path, I was advised to get a prenup. And surprisingly for my mother, and my mother's the type of person who watches those Hallmark Christmas movies and thinks that's real life. And she's urging me to come back to Pennsylvania and go live there for a while. And she swears I'm going to walk in the local flower shop and that girl who's a total mean girl to me in high school is going to take one look at me, bat her eyes. I'm going to live happily ever after. Okay. That's not going to happen. But so for this advice to come from my mother was surprising. And what also pleasantly surprised me were the reasons why she said I should do it. And I think my dad coached her, but whatever. Yes, I know my parents listened to this, so bat me with the newspaper later. Anyway, it was because my girlfriend at the time, where we were discussing the possibility of marriage, was in a situation with her credit because of a lot of expenses regarding her children's health care that she was delinquent on payments on, and it was affecting her credit scores and all other sorts of things. So the strategy behind it was twofold. Number one, to protect my business assets so that the work I'd done with my credit, my savings and what have you, would be unaffected by her issues. And also would provide a foundation where if we worked together, we could leverage my assets to rebuild hers. And essentially, we were going to set her up as a way of contributing to domestic expenses to make her an employee of the company and pay her a salary as a way of helping her to recoup the losses. So that was part of it. The other piece was just the larger side of it is if you're a married couple and one of you gets sick or has a business failure or something and goes into a severe world of credit hurt or even into bankruptcy, because there is the shield of a prenup in the existence of things like limited liability companies and such to shell the money, that while one takes a hit, the other keeps on going. Whereas without all that stuff, they both take the hit.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's a really good point. You do save a couple bucks in taxes, but it's definitely worth your sanity unless you find the right person, which good luck with that. Over 50% of people can't find the right person.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, I've been with my wife since I was 18. We have three children, 14, 11, and 8. If I said it was easy, I would be lying. It's extremely difficult. You have two people that are growing at different speeds, at different rates, at different angles, at different lengths, and you lose each other through children, through, you know, the minutiae of life. You get the bigger house, you get the bigger car. You know, I got my daughter doing dance. I got my sons doing lacrosse, football, winter football, basketball. I got a high schooler. It gets to the point where you just don't have time left in your day to have self-care, let alone relationship care,
right,
with your spouse. So I see why the divorce rate is so high. You know, we talked about it a few times, but luckily I have the resources that, you know, some people might not have now, like having a marriage counselor, a therapist, a life coach. It's really important to have a good team around you. It's really important to have a third party and not just have your one jaded friend to go to who's going to always tell you, yeah, life sucks, you know, change. It's really important, you know, on a financial side too, to have like a financial therapist, somebody that's going to help, may help you make good financial decisions, set you up correctly. It's the same thing as if you're having a personal trainer. Anyone can go to the gym, but if you have a personal trainer, you're going to see way better results than if you didn't.
And that's true.
So it's pretty much the same thing with your finances. Have you ever thought of the word currency? Right. I just learned this last week and it blew my mind that like the word currency is because money is an energy. Money is a current like electricity. It's all based on what we feel it is. And we feel the dollar's worth a lot. It's worth a lot. We feel like the dollar's worth nothing. It's worth nothing. It's like whatever our collective energy thinks of that asset is whether it's valuable or not. Look at stocks. We all think a stock's going to do good. It's worth $400 a share. We all think it stinks. Going to be worth one penny a share. It's pretty crazy when you look deeper behind the curtain, and basically see what is reality that we really don't see with our own eyes. You know.
Yeah, well, I have two tangential reactions to what you just said kind of underscore a couple of the points you just made. The first is, 2 years ago, a buddy of mine found a woman, got into a relationship with her, and he was thinking, you know what? She might actually be the one. So do you want to guess what his first move was as soon as they decided to make it exclusive?
He proposed.
No, he hired a relationship coach.
Smart.
And he looked at it not from the perspective of, I don't know how to function in relationships, I'm going to struggle with this. He looked at it from the perspective of, I want this, and I want this to work, and I want to get the support I need so that I can be happy with this woman. Well, they're still together, so I guess he might have been onto something. And then the other thing, and this goes to the point about the dangers of marriage, is you remember back in 2015 with the Supreme Court ruling that effectively made gay marriage legal throughout the United States. Is you know, there's a guy I knew, he's a divorce attorney, and he was he's the type who is like adamantly opposed to any form of what he views as aberrant or sinful behavior, and thinks that everybody who's not heterosexual is going to hell and all this other thing, and they're a bunch of heathens, what have you. And he was overjoyed by the news. And here was his reasoning. He said, a lot of people who are homosexual couples who have been together for a while, or getting caught in a hubris of suddenly they can be out about this in terms of living together in that way, are going to rush to the altar. So you're going to have a whole bunch of marriages go online all at once. Statistically, within 10 years of them, 50% of them are going to fail. I'm going to make a fucking fortune.
He's not wrong.
And, yeah.
My buddy said, you know, if us heteros are miserable, why not let the gays be miserable with us? You know, like that was his take on it, which I thought was pretty clever.
Because again, you're just, you know, homosexual, heterosexual, pansexual, whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
whatever.
I mean, they're just people.
Yep.
We're all people. And we're all susceptible to the same things.
100%. And it, why not if they want to join in on, you know, a highly unsuccessful strategy for a long-term relationship, hop on in, guys. You're welcome to join the party.
Hey, a friend of mine has a podcast, and a recurring theme in the interviews that she does is people get what they always thought they wanted, and then they find out what comes with that, and they decide, oh, I really didn't want that stuff that came with it, so I don't want this anymore.
Yeah, that's I mean, I heard a good stat the other day. They said half of the people fail in marriages, and the half that succeed, half of those people are unhappy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, I mean, you're literally playing the game with, you know, 1 out of 4 probability of winning. And if I said, hey, there's 4 airplanes, only one of them's going to make it to Orlando. Who wants to hop on? I don't think anybody would take hopping on those airplanes. But yet
I'll drive.
Yeah. But it's
road crazy. Trip, baby.
Yeah. See, I'll walk. Yeah, I want to live.
Walk, yeah.
Give me a bicycle. So yeah, it's pretty scary that when people ignore a lot of facts, but they a lot of people, this whole facts over feelings, if they feel like they're gonna be the one that survives the airplane, then go ahead. You know,
yeah.
Like if they feel like, you know, they want to do something, have fun with it. But if the statistics and the facts say that, hey, that's not really a good idea, then you know, you're most likely not gonna succeed. So.
Right. So now we're talking about mistakes. What are some of the common financial planning mistakes you see entrepreneurs make, and how do they avoid them? I'm going to guess number one is not having a financial plan, but I'm going to let you take it away.
Yeah. I mean, the number one thing is I see people try to do the right thing, meaning they have a 401k or an IRA. They think, yes, I have this money. I had a client a couple of years ago come to my office, slam down a statement. I'm a millionaire. She had $1.2 million in his 401k. I said, you're not a millionaire. You're about a $650,000 because you're holding $500,000 of the government's money.
Uh-huh.
And like, so people do the right thing, meaning they save money. They're putting money, let's call it, in the right pocket. But that pocket inside of a 401k or an IRA is illiquid till you're 60, 59 and a half. High fee, 12b1 fee, class A share fund fee, money manager fee, annual account fee, mutual fund expense fee. So Wall Street's making a lot of money on your account.
Uh-huh.
And it's taxable. So the government's making a lot of money on your account. You know, I ask my clients all the time, tell me the last time you saw a commercial for an investment. There isn't any. It's against the law. But tell me the last time you saw a commercial for tobacco or alcohol. Oh, an hour ago. So,
yeah,
the government intentionally keeps that information away from the public, because 401ks, IRAs, SEP, Simples, Pension, Deferred Comp, 457s, TSAs, these are all qualified accounts. And qualified accounts make the government billions of dollars a year.
Right.
They make it in backdoor deals with Wall Street. They make it in early withdrawal penalties. They make it in ordinary income, federal income tax. States make money on it. So the states are in on it too, because you have state income tax. You got FICA, Medicare, unemployment, Social Security. So people don't understand, when you need money in a down market, which is the only real time you need access to that money, similar to 2008 or 2020, you're talking about tens of millions of Americans taking money out of their 401k. So how do you think the market can drop 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 points? Because people need that money. And now you're talking about paying a 10% penalty, federal tax, state tax, FICA, Medicare, unemployment, Social Security, and the loss of the market. So an example is a client at $100,000 in 2008 in a 401k. They needed access to it, and they weren't 60 years old yet. They had to pay, the market lost 40%, left them with 60,000. Then they had to pay a 10% penalty to access it, left them with 54,000. Then they had to pay state tax, left them with 50,000. Then they had to pay federal income tax, left them with 37,500. Then they had to pay FICA, Medicare, unemployment, Social Security, left them with under $30,000. So you're talking about an asset where in a down market, on average, you need less, you're going to receive less than 30% of your asset net. So if you had $1 million, you'd be lucky to receive 300 grand.
Yeah, so that's ridiculous.
And that's what happened to over 45 million Americans in 2008 and 2009.
Yeah.
And to the tune of trillions of dollars that were stolen from them, from the there to help them. So what people are realizing, the strategy that I'm referring to, rich persons, Roth, infinite banking, be your own bank, this strategy has been around over 170 years. It's used by all the wealthy, ultra elite people. And tell me another trillion-dollar industry that's not mainstream.
Yeah, seriously.
So if it's not mainstream, it's a trillion-dollar industry. That means all the top 0.0001% of people use it. When you think of like a sports athlete, an example, Shohei Ohtani, some baseball player who was on the Angels, now he's on the Dodgers. He had a $700 million deal. Do you think he takes that $700 million and puts it in a bank where only $250,000 of it's FDIC insured?
Yeah, no. Yeah. That doesn't work. No.
No, he puts it in an overfunded life insurance policy where it's liquid, tax-free, sue-proof, divorce-proof in some states, averaging 15% over the last 20 years, tax-free, compounding. And when he takes money out of it, he's still earning interest on it to invest in other avenues. So you can do what the government tells you can do, or you can do what the successful wealthy people do. It's totally up to you. If you think CNN and MSNBC are your friends and they're not there as a to sell you something or have some sort of objective to tell you one thing over another, then, you know, I got this, you know, this salt to sell you if you're a slug. So you have to understand financial planning is more about knowledge, expertise, emotion. Perfect example. I have clients who make $50,000 a year. They're millionaires. I have clients who make $500,000 a year. Their net worth's actually negative. So it comes down to behavior. It comes down to a lot on mental, I guess, smarts. I don't know how else to say it. Morals, ethics, to understand that you have to plan for the future. And if you don't, the future's going to plan for you, and you may not like that plan.
Precisely. And, you know, that's the thing with pulling out of my savings is that then I have to deal with taxation on top of everything else. It's like, it's my money.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't put your money in a bank account where every time you took it out, they charge you 10% penalty, federal tax, state tax. Tell me what bank would get your money if it was a checking account. But yeah,
none, 10%.
Of their money, and your money is a direct correlation to your labor.
Yeah.
So you're taking 10% of your labor, your stress, your talent, your skills, your discipline, and you're putting in something where you can't touch it for decades. That's high tax, high fee, illiquid, where there's three parties to that contract. You have the government, you have Wall Street, and you have you. And unfortunately, out of those three parties, two of those make money hand over fist, and neither one of those are you.
Yeah, believe me, I've come to pay more attention to that, I realize that for all my years of effort, what I've actually gotten for, and it's pretty damn sad.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, you know, you got to understand the IRS code. You got to understand long-term planning. You got to take a look at LIPR averages, 5, 10, 20-year LIPR average. You got to make decisions now, and you got to save when you're young. I mean, I think I saw a stat, like if you save $200 a month when you're 20, it's worth more than saving $10,000 a month when you're 60.
Yeah.
So it's like you need – it's not about the amount. It's about the discipline. You know, it's like – who's going to be fat when they're older? The person who does one push-up a day from 20 till they're older, or the guy that waits till he's super overweight and then at 60 years old starts doing 10 push-ups a day?
Oh, it's going to be hard.
It's one of those things where you if you're not going to do it, nobody's going to do it for you. And it's really crazy where we're at right now with the economy, with interest rates, inflation, the market, the wars. It's things happen, and if you're not planned for it, you're going to be in trouble.
I think another piece of this, and this actually just occurred to me, this is the mastermind principle in action. You say something, it gives me an inspiration I never had before. It's one of the things I love about doing this podcast I've been doing for 11 years now. Is reminds me of when I was in college. I had my 1988 Chevrolet Camaro. It was the car I always wanted. I worked two jobs for an entire summer to buy it in cash, and the next thing I wanted to do with it was put a system in. So I had friends in the local competition auto selling circuit who were just profligates when it came to spending their money. Like they would have these state-of-the-art subwoofers in their lowriders. And then 2 months later, some other company would release another subwoofer that promised them one more degree of SPL, which is the pressure level with the boom, boom, boom. And they would offload the subwoofers they had just bought 2 months earlier for 50 cents on the dollar. So I was buying up subwoofers, components, the head unit, the amps, and everything else. And I was paying for it all in cash as I went and putting it in a big pile in my bedroom till I got it all together. And once I had it all together, my plan was to take the car's interior apart and install it. So I'm about 80% of the way there. And my dad, who's actually a very brilliant man, very well-meaning and everything, he's also more of a traditional investor, suggested that I just give up on the stereo and instead invest in an IRA. Now, I'm 19 years old. What the hell do I know about an IRA? What do I care about an IRA?
Right.
So here's where I'm going with this. I dismissed that advice out of hand. So, and that was actually the lecture I got a whole thing. Well, you shouldn't have got the Camaro. You should have got a car that's transportation. No, I worked two jobs all summer long so I could have the car I wanted. Yep. So that's capitalism in action, number one. I don't want to drive an econo box. I want to drive something fast and fun because yes, I can, right? That's number one. Number two, I wanted a system because that's what I wanted. If you don't get some things in your life that you want, even if they don't make any obvious sense, the value to you is your enjoyment of it. And if you don't have enjoyment in your life, you don't have a life. So I kept hearing these, get rid of the Camaro, get a, and they would name these cars that just, the names of them were just so ugly. And I couldn't even imagine driving these freaking things. Uh-huh. Like I felt embarrassed even thinking about it, much less anything else. Now, what if we did financial literacy a little bit differently? And what if, not when I was 18, when I, then when I went into that summer, I worked the two jobs to raise the money for the Camaro. But what if somebody had told me, because nobody told me this, when I was maybe 15 years old, they'd have said, you know, in a couple years, you're going to be heading off to college and you're probably going to want to have a nice car, or you might want to put a system in your car, or you might want to live in a house instead of a dorm room at college so you can throw parties. Now, think about how you're going to afford this, and think about how, if off your allowance and your part-time job and whatever income you have right now, you took a little bit of this and you invested it like the wealthy people do. And by the time you're 18, rather than have to work two jobs for an entire summer, two minimum wage jobs all summer long and lose a summer, you can have a car and then gradually pay in cash, you can have your system. What if you had a bunch of money there that accumulated interest that you could withdraw from tax-free? And when you want the car, you just go pull some money. When you want the system, you just go pull some money.
That'd be ingenious. I think your
But
father,
they
like
don't,
most
but they
parents,
don't teach that.
no, and your father's advice was the best that he knew. I mean,
Yeah,
an
oh, I don't
IRA,
fault him. I don't
you
fault
know,
him. I
like
think he
I
was
think it's
looking
a
out
great
for me.
idea to have you have an investment, you know, and that's just what most Americans, they don't know that when people think like I'm gonna invest in life insurance, or like you're freaking crazy, dude. Like, I don't need life insurance. I'm 15, I'm 18, I'm 20, I'm 30, I don't have any kids, I'm 40. It's like you're not investing in life insurance, you're investing in the codes of the life insurance itself. Just like people are like, I'm gonna invest in a 401k. Can you tell me what a 401k is? Without knowing exactly what it does, what is 401k, right?
I don't know what it is. I don't know what the hell a Roth IRA is. I'm just told it's
Right. They
supposed to
have
be
all these
something you
weird things.
dump into to avoid tax liabilities, but it's
It's
like
still illiquid. It's still FILO.
it
It's
just bores me, candidly.
right. So people don't know. They're like, well, I'm gonna invest in an IRA or a 401k. They can't even tell me what this stands for. What's the acronym for? Like, where did they come up with the so when you invest in a 401k, you're investing in a wrapper around your money, right? Think of like if you were just wrap up, you know, tinfoil around your money. That wrapper has different rules, laws, regulations, and code. And what the code inside of 401k is it's illiquid, 59.5 year old, 10% penalty, federal tax, state tax, FICA, Medicare, unemployment, Social Security tax, 12B1 fee, Class A share fund fee, money manager fee, annual account fee, mutual fund expense fee. Totally in the biggest casino in the world. No downside protection, no lawsuit protection, no disability protection. And then you have life insurance where it's tax-free, it's liquid, it's non-market correlated, or if it is market correlated, you have a 1% guarantee. If the market crashes, you lose nothing. It's sue-proof, divorce-proof in some states, disability, long-term care, life, chronic illness, critical injury. If you have a stroke, a heart attack, you have access to hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash. You get cancer, you have access to hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash, if not millions, depending on your age and when did you purchase it. When you compare getting something for your fees or just throwing your money away so that you can have the joy of you're paying for some schmuck's Lambo in Manhattan, because that's where those fees are going, is into Wall Street. If that makes you feel good, or for those same fees, you can protect your family, you can have liquidity, you can have it tax-free, you can have it liquid. You can make sure you can't lose, have downside protection. You can have non-direct recognition and still earn money when you pull it out. If you get sued, it's still there because HIPAA laws prevent anybody, hence COVID, HIPAA laws prevent anybody from finding out you have that asset, whether it's a creditor. When you get divorced, courts mandate you to get life insurance. They're not going to have your ex-wife, your ex-spouse sell their life insurance to pay you when the life insurance is to protect you and the kids. So, if you understand how the rules of the game are played, the successful people are winning, the knowledgeable people are winning, the ignorant people are losing, and it's all because they're playing Monopoly like they were playing checkers. The rules aren't the same in one game for another game. You need to know what the codes are, what the rules are. The best example of this is look at our last election before the Biden election. We had Hillary and Trump on stage. What does Trump say? What does Hillary say to Trump? You need to show your tax returns because you don't pay any tax. And what does Trump say? I use the same IRS codes that your donors use, and you had 30 years to change the codes and you didn't,
He
right?
said that not only during the general election debates, but also during the primary debates when his Republican primary opponents were saying the same thing. He said, "Look, you people, you Senator Cruz, for example, you Senator Rubio, you had the chance to change these laws. Why didn't you?"
And the reason is it because lobbyists. I myself
Exactly.
was part of the AALU when I worked at Guardian Life Insurance out of Manhattan, where I used to go down to Washington, D.C. in the White House after hours. I have video proof of it if you want to see the pictures. I used to go to the White House after hours to go to a private dinner with the congressman and the senator. And guess what I had in my pocket? Might be an envelope. I don't know what was in there because I was instructed not to look, but you can use your imagination. So when you have these systems and processes in place that are the ultra wealthy, the ultra rich say, we want to create our own retirement account. That's the retirement account I want to be in. I don't want to be in the retirement account where the peasants are, where the common folk are. I want to do what winners do. How do you become successful? You copy. If you want to be the best basketball player, you watch videos of Michael Jordan. If you want to be the best, movie star, you follow, you see what Tom Cruise does. You want to be the best quarterback, you see what Tom Brady does. You don't try to recreate the wheel when there's 7 billion plus people. Anything you thought of doing has already been done. Anything you want to do has already been done. So do you want to copy what the losers do and what everybody else does that are failing? Like, think about if you're copying somebody in class on a test. Do you want to copy the kid that gets an A+ or copy the kid that gets a D- when you're copying the answers?
I want to make a deal with the A+ student. I want to get his or her knowledge in exchange for something that's valuable to them.
That's what people don't understand. You're absolutely right. If when I was in school, if I did that, which I never did, wink, wink. But if I were to do that, then I would copy the kid who's the smartest in class. If I'm gonna want to invest in my future, I'm gonna copy what the most successful people do, the millionaires and billionaires, and now we have trillionaires, which is scary, because that's just way too much power for one human. So when you understand how the world is set up, you're able to make better decisions for yourself, for the people you love, for your family, for your goals, and for your future.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think that you raise a lot of great points about this, particularly when it comes to looking at who our role models are for things like this. And, you mentioned John D. Rockefeller earlier, and I'm not sure if this means anything, but I remember a story about him. He was down on Wall Street one day, and some enterprising go-getter young man came up to him and asked him pitched him on a business plan and asked Rockefeller to invest for something like $1,000 or something like that. And Rockefeller said, "No, I'm not going to give you $1,000. Here's what I'm going to do instead." Took him into the Wall Street building, introduced him to 10 top financial players. And he said, and then he turned to the man and I said, "Now you know 10 people who can get you a lot further than $1,000. I've just given you a greater gift."
It's very true. It comes down to this thing. You can give a man a fish and he eats for a day. You can teach a man to fish, he eats for a lifetime.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, for our world right now, it's all about who you know, not what you know.
Well, there's nothing new there, my friend.
Well, the relationships that you build. I mean, luckily, I've been in finance for over 2 decades. I've known some pretty cool people. I'm on all the DraftKings commercials nationwide. I play basketball on Celtics court. I'll be there on the 18th before the Detroit Pistons game. I get to go in suites to the World Series, to the NBA Finals. I get to go to, field side, 50-yard line at the NFL games. It's really like finding successful people, mirroring them, copying them, doing what they do, and building relationships with them. And it starts off with bringing value, micro values. So it's like you got to figure out what they drink, what they eat, how they live, how they talk, how they dress. And you have to speak it into existence. I mean, I was just talking about this to my son on Friday before I went to the cannabis show, Mohegan Sun. But when you want to do something, you have to speak it into existence. Now, some people can look at that as lying or being a snaky or sneaky sales guy. If you say, "Hey, I'm one of the top advisors there are, and I have 3 clients. I'm one of the best there is in Connecticut, and I had 50 clients." I guess speaking it into existence, year 2, year 4, year 5, year 7, 12, 15, 18, 20, 21. And what happened is it came true. Because my subconscious mind, every time that I spoke it, my subconscious mind said, "That is who you are." So if you tell yourself you're a loser, you tell yourself, "I'm not good enough," you tell yourself, "I can't," it comes down to the little choo-choo train that could, the elementary. Where if you think you can, you will. If you think you can't, you won't. Either way, you're right. So it comes down to that in every aspect of your life. I'm a good husband. I'm a good father. I try to do the right thing. You know, I go out of my way to help people. You have that mantra and that energy about yourself. And you tell yourself, you look in the mirror, you do that. It works. You turn into what you think. And it's just like that in finance. If you think you're going to be successful, I mean, I remember back in when I was 18. I don't know if you know Connecticut at all, but there's this town called Greenwich. It's like the richest town in the country, or top three.
Yeah.
I used to drive by the mansions. Again, at this point in my life, I smoked weed. So my friends and I were smoking, and I said, I'm going to own one of those houses one day. My friends would laugh. There's no way you can own a house like that. You're just some punk kid. No way. And
I was told kids like you don't get Camaros. You got to drive an economy car. And that actually drove me to want the Camaro even more because essentially, screw you. Don't tell me what I get and don't get. I went out and I worked for this.
100%.
Yeah.
And if you want to have a peaceful, secure life, I mean, the number two reason why people divorce is money.
Yeah.
Number one reason people are in prison is money.
Right.
So if you understand how having money gives you peace, gives you ability to do X, whatever that is, buy a new car, go on vacation, like my son, and my middle son is ADHD. Well, I have a therapist for him. He's going to have a better life because of it. You know, it's having the resources to do something that you need to do. You need money. There's no other way to do it.
Well, so, you know, it's as I've said for many years, I agree that money doesn't buy happiness, but what money does is it solves the problems that get in the way of happiness. Put that even simpler. If I'm going to cry, I'd rather cry behind the wheel of a Corvette than on a bicycle on a rainy day.
It's so true. Yeah, I mean, money. And then I heard a saying, oh my God, it was hilarious. The guy says, whoever thinks money doesn't buy happiness doesn't have any. I was like, oh, that's funny.
I'll also quote Jeff Walker, the creator of the product launch formula. In his book, he wrote that when you don't have money, you've got problems. When you have money, you have problems. They're just a different set of problems. You're going to have problems anyway. You might as well have money problems.
I do agree with that. You know, when I was poor, all my dad made was noodles and eggs with ketchup and hamburger helper with no hamburger meat. And, if I'm going to starve, you know, or I'm going to have a problem, I'd rather it be that I'm not hungry.
Yeah.
You know, or I'm not cold, or I'm not wet, or I'm not overheated or hot. If I have a problem, I'd rather have, my $100,000 plus Jaguar I just bought has a flat tire. You know, that was annoying.
Yeah.
You know, I was like nervous, you know, like, oh shoot, I gotta, these tires, it's a 600 horsepower car. The tires in the back are probably 40 pounds with the 22s, you know, and I'm like, oh crap, I gotta change my own tire. Well, I'd rather have that than say, I broke my leg or I got hit by a car because I was walking on the freaking street, right?
Right, right.
So it is a different set of problems, but yes, I'd rather definitely have money with problems than not have money with problems, for sure.
Yeah. You're always going to have 99 problems the way I look at it. I think the lowest I've ever gotten is like 93, but then they wouldn't show up. It's just the way of the world. Yeah. So we're getting close to wrapping up here. And I know you have an invitation for our listeners, which I'm going to share for you. But one more question before we put a cap on this is, I think that this deals with that, particularly for entrepreneurs, even though we have our corporate veils, we have our protections, our corporations, and things like that. It is a simple fact that the personal and the business do become intertwined. And you hear a lot of success coaches say things like, build a business to support your lifestyle rather than a lifestyle that supports your business. All well and good. So to me, that comes down to one of the points you wanted to cover in the green room. We've actually touched most of what you wanted to share with us, but this is one we haven't really gotten into is, you know, how does one go about integrating personal financial planning with their business financial strategies, particularly with your limited liability company owners with that pass-through taxation?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, you made a comment about putting your child on the books. I do want to let your audience know I'm not a licensed CPA or accountant, but right. I have had the pleasure to sit in rooms with hundreds of them and my clients. So I know the strategy set up for. I mean, there's this really cool strategy. Again, you usually need about $10 million of net worth. Most of your listeners may not be there because that's not most people in the world.
Right.
But I have just four in underwriting right now. Because I work with one of the top estate planners in Glastonbury, Connecticut, and he refers me to his clients. But so there's strategies where you literally could take after-tax dollars, or excuse me, before-tax dollars, like 401k dollars. You could change like the TPA, the third-party administrator, to allow the purchase of life insurance. Then you put the 401k money or IRA money in the life insurance. Then so you use before-tax dollars, meaning if they were tax-free on the way in, you got a write-off. And then it grows tax-free and then comes out to you tax-free.
Right.
And then you can put it into an ILIT trust, an irrevocable life insurance trust. And then when you happen to pass away, nothing is taxable on the estate tax level or the ordinary income tax level. So basically, a deal I'm working on right now, the guy's got about $4 million in his IRA. He's never going to touch it. He's worth $20 million, has residual income, rental income. He's never going to need it. Instead of having that go through estate taxes, which is 50%, and then ordinary income taxes, which is 50%, instead of leaving a $1 million to his charity trust or his children, he ends up taking that $4 million and buying $12 million of life insurance. So now he's leaving $12 million because life insurance is tax-free, but for the same asset, he would have left his family $1 million.
Yeah.
And it's all about shifting the codes, shifting the plans, having different TPAs, third-party administrators, having the codes buy stuff. There's another strategy called Kaizen, or premium financing. I had a client, had about $3 million in real estate in New York, never touching it inside of a trust. He said, I need life insurance. I said, okay, use your trust to fund it. You use your real estate to fund it. No cost to you whatsoever, not one penny. He goes, what are you talking about? You can do a third-party collateralization on a hard asset to fund a life insurance policy, have the policy grow with dividends from the loan from the bank that's leveraging the asset, have the dividends pay back the loan, and in a matter of 7 years, you have a free $10 million life insurance policy.
Wow.
And then cost you one penny out of your pocket.
I'm going to have to go back and subscribe to my own show and listen to this.
There's some really cool things that me doing this for over two decades and leveling up, so to say, in the industry and meeting other very creative lawyers, accountants, CPAs, attorneys, elder law attorneys, what they're doing. There's definitely strategies if you have the money to afford the lawyer, because lawyers aren't cheap. It doesn't go in my pocket, but lawyers definitely need it. To do some of these trusts, and trusts aren't cheap. So, you know, you usually need like a higher net worth person, but if you're that higher net worth person listening, I'll let you know there's some crazy, crazy strategies you can do. And if you're not one of those high net worth people, you're just a, you know, average guy with a $50,000 to $150,000 career job, and you're like, well, what do I do? You know, number one is get out of debt. Number two is make sure you have 3 months liquid, right? Number three is make sure that the money that you're putting away is tax-free. So you would assume Roth, but I don't really like Roth because of the 59.5-year rule, the 10% penalty, all the fees, and the full market exposure. So my advice would be to start funding an overfunded life insurance policy. If you want to look more into it, you can Google Forbes Rich Person's Roth. And there's two articles, one written by a CPA, a certified public accountant, Ed Slot, one of the top ones in the country. And then there's one written by a CFP, a certified financial planner, which tell you about this strategy. This is back in 2018 and 2020. And I've been doing these strategies since 2003.
Right.
So it's build your foundation, build your own bank. If the banks fail, you're fine. Everyone thinks you got to buy gold and silver. That's the stupidest thing you can do, because you have hedge funds that are violently hedging against it by putting puts on it, so they can make all the money on Tesla car batteries, cell phones, everything that gold and silver is in. They're keeping the price down so they can mass produce and make money on the stocks. So you're not going to beat BlackRock. You're not going to beat these major hedge funds. So if you want to protect yourself, especially if CDC comes in, which everyone's worried about central digital currency, as I am, then they can just shut off your money and kill you because you didn't like how you posted how you're Republican or something.
Yeah.
Insurance companies are the safest place to put your money. So there's some cool stuff you can do. And definitely look into it based on your situation, and look into these IRS codes. You know, you can read my books. I'm willing to send any of your listeners that are interested in my three books. They're on Amazon. I'll send them to you for free. Just email me at joe@ironhawkfinancial. Just type in free books. I'll send them to you. Go to my website, www.ironhawkfinancial.com. Go to contact us, fill out your name, email, and phone number. I'll send you the books for free. Read that. I'll send you my articles that I've been featured in. I'll send you the magazines that I've been featured in. And you could do your own research on what I'm saying in there.
Oh,
and you'll
great.
Realize that what you're doing is the right thing. You're just doing it the wrong way.
Right, right. Absolutely. And I appreciate that. I was going to tell people, so your email address is joe@ironhawkfinancial.com. I do encourage our listeners, just hit up Joe and tell him you heard him on the Business Creators Radio Show. I was also going to point out, if you go to the website, ironhawkfinancial.com, you see some of these same offerings. There's a video from him on the front page that explains how a lot of this works. And if you scroll down the page, you'll see the direct access to his books. There's a Better Way Than a 401k, Long-Term Care Without Long-Term Pains, Being Your Own Bank. And I encourage you to check those out at ironhawkfinancial.com. Before we wrap up, I want to say just one more thing that speaks, I think, a bit to the mindset and how corporate programming through the media causes us to repel ourselves from even giving this stuff its fair due and buying into what the government tells us about how to get rich, when really it's the government and Wall Street that's getting all the money. Like, where are we getting our proceeds from the fees? So you made reference to the years and years and years of drama about Donald Trump's tax returns and how he wouldn't release them. And he kept saying, well, they're under audit, so we're going to postpone that, et cetera. And at the time, I conjectured, and it turned out I was fairly accurate about this, that there were two things going on with him. Number one, that when he had his crash in the late 80s, that he had amortized, that he had leveraged so much debt in terms of tax deferments and such, that it was not fully amortized. And what the American public would see, that he went decades without paying taxes at all, which isn't exactly what happened, but it wasn't far off. And then we found out during his presidency that he had actually surprisingly low cash flow for a billionaire. And that speaks to the fact that his assets are largely leveraged, which we find out more and more every day. So it's one thing to be a multi-billionaire on paper. It's another thing for where the money to be. And it's another thing entirely to leverage the tax strategies of the rich, which is exactly what he did. And regardless of what you think of him, whether you love him, hate him, well, there is no in between. You love him or you hate him. But So I'm accommodating both sides of our audience here, because I have people on both sides of that very, very specific continuum. Is in the late 80s, early 90s, when he had the crash, and he was, I don't know if it was 82 million or 82 billion in the hole. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was million. But he didn't have the cash flow at all, but he still had a company. He still had employees. He still had a family. So regardless of how it would look to the American public if he ever decided to become a politician, which, by the way, was already on his mind. That's what the R of the Deal was really all about. It was a teaser because he was thinking about running for president, fun fact, and back in 1987. I view it as he had a responsibility to use those tax laws, to use those bankruptcies so that he could keep his businesses open and keep people employed so that they could support their families. You can think whatever you want of that. And the final thought I have, and I thought of this earlier, but I just couldn't fit it in, but I'm going to say it now, and I think this will give people to think about, is, Joe, do you know where this whole thing about presidential candidates showing their tax returns comes from? Historically, you know, kick this off?
No.
The Checker speech, 1952. Vice presidential candidate Richard Nixon was accused of having the slush fund. He went on television, gave the Checker speech, promised to reveal all of his financial records, which he did. And we found out that on that one, Tricky Dick was clean as a hound's tooth. And in the same speech, he also called upon his running mate, General Eisenhower, in addition to the Democrat ticket, the two gentlemen on that ticket, to release their tax returns. Now, there's a story that when Eisenhower and his people were in that hotel suite and they were watching the Checker speech on television, everybody was cheering like, oh, man, Nixon got him. Nixon nailed it. Eisenhower sat there, his face was turning so red, you could feel the heat coming from it. And he took his pencil and stabbed it into his notepad so hard he made a hole in it. And then he went into the bedroom and slammed the door so hard the hinges almost fell off. You know why that is?
Why?
Because between the end of his career as Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces in World War II and when he was a presidential candidate during those 7 years, he had made a considerable fortune through one-time sale of book royalties, through speaking honorariums, through his salaries and various sinister positions he held. As president of Columbia University, there were times when he held several jobs simultaneously and got full salaries for all of them, even though his work was very limited. And he had made himself a multimillionaire, and he dreaded the American people seeing that and thinking, oh, this guy's just in it for himself. He's in it to make a buck. And then there was just the larger thing of why should presidential candidates have to reveal this? Of course, they're likely to have a little bit more money than the average American. Why do we need to tap into this whole rich versus poor thing when selecting our leaders? The fact is, if you've gotten to the point where you're running for president, chances are you're a millionaire. That's just the way it is. I think Ron DeSantis is the only politician I've seen in my lifetime who lives a hand-to-mouth existence, even though he's a governor.
Yeah, I think a lot of it stems from jealousy.
Yeah, and it ties into that. So it becomes, again, hatred of the rich versus the poor. And yep. Look at these money grubber politicians. They're just in it to make a buck.
It's all about division. The government has been masterminds at it. I don't know if you remember the movie Ants, where the grasshoppers were saying, if those ants ever realize they outnumber us 1,000,000 to 1, we're dead. And our way of life is over.
Yep.
Well, all they do is keep dividing us through the new one, gender, which used to be a disorder, now it's celebrated. They divide us through money. They divide us through sports, politics, religion, any way that they can. Height, weight, social status, hair color, eyes. Look, you know, like they say that like racism is bad. Well, they instill race into every person in America in the school systems. It's insane. It's like the most racist people in this world are the ones claiming that they're not, it baffles me on how ass backwards our world is, to what any normal human conscious being would think would be suitable or appropriate.
Yeah.
Right? Is it appropriate to chop a child's private parts off or teach them how to change what God gave them? You know, they take God out of the school. Whenever God is taken out, whether you're spiritual or not, I know I didn't make myself, the devil always comes in.
Well, I see what you mean. I'm a big believer in separation of church and state myself. And if we're talking about public schools, then I'm not sure if I want God in there either. But at the same time, I don't want one God being banished while another God is being celebrated. It's kind of an all or nothing if we're talking about the public schools, because that is government.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to have separation of church and state. But just to really cap this off, because we're really at the end here, I remember in the 1980s, reading some little article, and I haven't been able to find any citations on it lately, but I actually remember also seeing news reports about it at the time. There was this teenage girl, and she was applying to college. And if I remember correctly, if I'm off by my facts, it's only by slightly, she was denied a scholarship and her parents sued over that, or she was denied college admission and her parents sued over that, or something like that, because, and this is the 1980s, they asked the question even then, what race are you? And she refused to answer. The reason is that family was of the Baha'i faith, BA'HAI. And one of their tenets is that there is only one race, the human race. So she's not going to call herself Black, white, Asian, Hispanic, whatever. She only recognized one race, the human race. So that question, therefore, was not one that she felt with her religious ethics that she could answer.
Right.
And I remember being struck by that even then and thinking, especially when I was surrounded by so much actual racism, not manufactured racism, but like the type of racism that actually leads to all sorts of subjugation, thinking, you know what, compared to these messages I'm getting every day, this makes sense. There is really only one race. People are people. They look different. They come from different places, but they're all human beings.
Yeah, it's when it comes to race, to sum it up, I know we're running out of time, but I mean, the schools have it down pat. If you're white, you have white guilt. And if you're black, you have slave guilt. Either way, you are easily to be manipulated, controlled if you feel weak, if you feel like you are less than. And they control our entire civilization with guilt and fear.
Well, that's, yeah, guilt, fear, and division. So I would encourage our listeners to think about that when somebody's saying something to you like, oh, what Joe Lombardi's telling you, that doesn't apply to you. You're not a rich person. You're just X. Get rid of that. And if you're not in a position where you have that type of capital or cash flow right now, make your plan to get there. You deserve it. I mean, I'm inspired by this. I'm going to be looking more into this. I'm going to buy your books and read them.
I appreciate that. And I think that once people get this information and they really look into it, they'll see that the lie that they've been sold, which is what? I'm going to work a 40-hour a week job. I'm going to do it for, 40 years. I'm going to save money, and I'm going to be in a way lower tax bracket when I'm retired. So what that dream is telling you, that you're going to make the most money, the best in your 40s, 50s, and 60s, and then when you retire, you're going to live in poverty. Because ordinary income is tied to the income rate is tied to how much money you make. So, yep. So the lie is I'm gonna work 40 hours a week for 40 years. I'm then gonna retire and I'm gonna be living in a box and I'm gonna be happy.
Because I'm not gonna be happy in a tax bracket. I wish I could live in a box. You know why? Because I'm a minimalist. I can't find an apartment small enough that also has a 24-hour swimming pool attached to the community. I tried. And that's just because I'm an essentialist and a minimalist. That's my choice. And also, I had somebody ask me just last week. She said, "Look, you own a business, and you're entrepreneurial, and you've got all these things going on. You're telling me about, why are you living in an apartment? Why aren't you living in like a 5-bedroom house?" And I gave her the answers that I don't want to. So I think there's another thing, just in terms of how we define what wealth truly is. So with that, Joe Lombardi, we could go on for 6 more hours on this, and we may have to have you come back sometime once, you know, if you have any updates on these strategies for the rich, something new comes up you want to share with us, just to have your agent get a hold of us or you do it yourself, and we'll have you back.
I really enjoyed this, Adam. I had a blast. I believe you're very knowledgeable, and it was definitely fun to do this radio show with you, and I'm thankful for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you, of course. This has been an honor. Believe me, in education.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.